A listener named Chris wrote me and asked, what are effective methods for conducting competitor analysis? Stay tuned and you'll hear my answer.
Running a service business can be hard. It is not unusual for business owners in industries like contracting, home repair, auto repair, business-to-business services like janitorial, IT and accounting, and many others to feel overwhelmed by all the priorities facing them at any given time. Between addressing the needs of the customers, managing the employees, figuring out the financials, and getting processes in place, feeling like you're making significant progress on your business journey can be difficult. Welcome to Service Industry Success, hosted by Brian Harding. Each week, Brian will look at real-world strategies for building the business you are dreaming of, while also sharing tactics to get through some of the most frustrating parts of business ownership with a lot more ease. Let's get started.
I got a note from a listener named Chris recently who asked me, what are effective methods for conducting competitor analysis? By the way, before I go on, you can also ask any question you have by writing me on Facebook, X, or via email to hello@serviceindustrysuccess.com. So just want to make sure everybody's clear. Like, anytime you got a question you want me to talk about on the podcast, all you do is get a hold of me. I'm easy to find. Anyhow, Chris was asking about competitor analysis, which is a broad topic, and there's a couple ways to interpret the question. But I'm going to answer the way I think Chris means it, which is to say I'm not going to be taking any deep dives in financials or due diligence. I'm not going to focus on any one area like marketing or some kind of analysis that would require like an NDA, non-disclosure agreement, or some other kind of confidentiality agreement. I'm not going to get into that kind of stuff, which would be applicable in some circumstances. That's not what I'm going to be talking about here. So if you hear, competitor analysis and you're thinking of something different, I just want to be clear about what I'm talking about here. The kinds of things I've done personally to learn about our competitors and like how we went about doing it, because the things we learned were like invaluable. When I say we, I mean as a business owner, but also as a manager of a business before I became a business owner. This was a very common thing. The things we're talking about today are very common things that I did way before I became a business owner. So for me, there's two basic categories. There's external or customer facing, and there's internal, which is more employee centric KPIs, like how the business operates, in a more metric way. And like, what's the culture like? Those kind of internal things. So external, customer facing, here's the kinds of things that I paid attention to. And some of these things I did, but most of the time I did not do these things. And as I go through each category, I'll try to be real clear about who did which parts and things like that. But first thing for people or for looking at competitor is obviously, what is their marketing like? How do they market? Everybody has a website. So of course, that's a great place to start. But if they have other kinds of outreach they do, if they do, other brochures they mail out or mailers or like that kind of stuff, I need to know too. Mostly I want to understand like, what's the feel and the vibe that they're trying to communicate, right? So it's not, the words are part of it for sure, but like, what's the point? What's the point of what they're trying to get at? Like, what are they selling themselves as? What's the feelings they're trying to, what's the emotions they're trying to speak to? And sometimes the answer is none. Sometimes they don't seem to have any direction as far as that stuff goes. And that's awesome for me to learn, because if they're not doing that, that just means when I do, it's gonna be that much more compelling. But mainly when I'm looking at the website, like, what's the feel and the vibe? Also, what are their selling points? Almost always it's too much about how many years they've been in business and how they have fair pricing and they have lots of expertise and their people are experts and blah, blah, blah. And it's almost always too little other specific compelling reasons to buy from them instead of Brand X, which again is awesome for me to know, because I don't want to say the same things as everyone else. And if they are, I recently did this with somebody where we went through in their industry and we looked at, 12 or 14 websites in the geographic area where his business is at. And I want to say like 9 of the 12 or however many it was, 8, 9, 10, the vast majority, they talked about expertise, years in business, and fair pricing. And it's like, well, okay, our work here is going to be a lot more simple than we thought, because they're all saying the same thing. So all we got to do to stand out is not say that. So on the website marketing stuff, this is a piece I will do, but I'll do it with somebody, ideally somebody in my organization or somebody I know who is like my ideal client. So if my ideal client is a 40 to 60 year old woman, then I have input on this, but I want to pay more attention to what she says about this, my 40 to 60 year old friend or family member or employee or whatever, I want to pay more attention to what they think than I think. Just like if it was our target audience was a 22-year-old man who lived in a very dense city population like San Francisco or New York or Austin or something like that, I'll have input, but it's less important what I think than what somebody who matches that avatar thinks. So marketing I'll do with people and I'll ask specific questions, but I really want to key into the perceptions and feelings of the person who is most like the avatar we're trying to talk to. All right, what's their acquisition or onboarding process? Nowadays, it's a lot of like, is it automated or is it personal? A lot of companies are moving more towards automation, which has pros and cons. It's certainly more efficient. It feels less personal. Again, what's it feel like from the perspective of the avatar? Again, I have strong opinions on that. On the automation stuff, I'm not going to get in the weeds on that here because my opinions about how you should automate are not really relevant. You'll have reasons to do it or not to do it. And that's probably way more important than anything I would say. What's their appointment setting process like? How flexible are they with the appointment times? How far out are they booking? And this is an important thing for me to pay attention to with our competitors. People can tell you whatever they want, like over beers on a Friday night or at an industry association dinner or whatever about how busy they are. But the real indicator is their lead time when people call. They can say, oh, we got more work than we've ever had. And like you call and you're like, okay, well, we can get there in 3 hours. Like they're not that busy. So I want to know how far out they're booking and I want to know how flexible they are with their appointment times. If I'm in an industry where I have 4-hour appointment time windows and I call brand X and they're giving 1 or 2 hour appointment windows, I better know that's going to be a deficiency for me. And I'm not saying you have to change it. I'm not saying you have to match what they're doing. I am saying we better be aware of that because those things matter to some folks. If it matters to your avatar, then we better look at that stuff. The appointment setting process, again, this is now I'm going to start getting things where I'm going to delegate that to somebody who's like the avatar because I want them to actually like call the company and tell their story about why they need somebody to come out if they're coming out or we're going to go drop things off at the office if it's like a accounting firm or something like that. Like I want the person who's the avatar. If I'm the avatar, great. If I'm not, then somebody else has got to do it. I might be sitting there with them. I might not because sometimes it's weird for people for that to happen. I might just give them a list of like, I want to know the answer to these 7 questions. Go in your quiet office or do this at home, like whatever makes sense. So the appointment setting process is now where I'm going to start delegating that out probably. What is their geographic area? If we can ask that, if it's applicable, if it's like a home service or somebody who comes out and fixes things, what's the geographic area? And if applicable, like what's the response time? What are their pre-appointment communications like? So whoever booked the appointment, are you getting reminders 24 hours in advance, same day? Are the reminders warm and personal? Are they automated and robotic? Like what if anything happens on the day of or the day before or 3 days before? Like what's all that stuff like? And again, what does my avatar think of those things? Like you could have lots of communication that comes across kind of cold and disinterested. And there's a lot of volume, but there's not a lot of impact. There's not a lot of benefit. So I want to know that stuff. What's the wording they're using? How does it feel when those things come across? And then we get to the point where, like, again, now I'm going to start talking about in the examples I have. Of course, my business was one where we sent people out to fix things in other people's homes and stuff like that, or apartments or whatever. So this would apply in a lesser degree where you're like going to an accounting office and dropping things off. But there's still things here that would apply that I still want to pay attention to. I want to know what is the appointment like? What are the keywords or scripting that is being used, if any? What's the pace? What's the urgency? What's the feel? So, what are specific things that happen? What are specific words are being used? But how does this feel? Because we all know people make emotional decisions. We know that sitting in a room talking about it. But in the real world, we go out and do things that don't, we have processes and systems and activities and actions that may not be geared towards an emotion. And so that does create a feeling. And I just want to know, what is the feeling that is being created? Because I think that matters more than we tend to understand or believe. Again, what's pace and urgency? Are they in a hurry? Is there a cadence? Is it slow and methodical? And specifically for people who are in industries where people go out, the service provider goes out, here are key things that I wanted to know. what are the priorities or the areas of focus for the technician coming out? So is their angle education? Like, well, we want to make sure you know how to use all these things, and we want to make sure you understand your system or your whatever. Like if you're an HVAC, an angle, not the angle, but an angle is client understanding. And do you know how to use all these fancy gadgets you have? And do you know what to happen if, what to do if you're, if you have a gas leak, do you want to turn that off or like whatever it is, right? So for some companies, education is the angle. For other companies, it's more investigation. You know, there was one company that I knew that like their guys would find a reason to get in a crawl space no matter what. It didn't matter. They found a reason to get in the crawl space. And what do you know, when they got in the crawl space, they found all kinds of problems. They would take pictures of things and bring it up and, hey, I was just doing a safety inspection. Could I have an extra 30 minutes here and tell my next call and I'm done in the crawl space? And I'm like, here's a picture of this really gnarly thing I found, and you better get that fixed or else. Like that was their angle, right? Is the angle speed? Like they're in and out. Like there's companies where like they're just like knocking things out, and speed is the angle. Like we were efficient, we get things going. And then a more common one nowadays is the slower, we're establishing rapport and building value. That's much more common for, again, service providers that are like people's homes and businesses and stuff like that. That's a much more common modality now, but all of them are still in play. But I just want to know for brand X, who I'm competing against, like what is their vibe? What is their focus? What is their style? Like what are they doing when they get to that? When they get there? Same things would apply. Again, if I was a marketing or a bookkeeping company and I go out for my free consultation, or I send my friend who's the avatar to go do the free consultation, same thing. What's the angle? And, you know, they're going to be the same. Educational, do you understand this stuff? Investigative, like where are the problems we might need to find? Speed and establishing rapport and value. Like the modalities are oftentimes the same. You know, how they play out is a little bit different, obviously, if it's in your home or your business versus you go to the provider's place, but same kind of modalities. I just want to know for brand X, which one are they or others? This is not an all-inclusive list, but these are the types of things that people would be doing. And of course, pricing. Now, I believe we tend to focus too much on this, but it's important to have an awareness of competitor pricing, but we should not be setting price based on what others charge. In the beginning, I know you have no choice, and like you have tribal knowledge or industry knowledge, and like you just, well, everybody else charges this, we're going to charge that. I get all that stuff. Again, pricing is something to be aware of. I never focused on it, and they were like, well, they're charging this for that, so therefore we need to charge $7 less. I never, ever did that. As I mentioned before, for all I know, that company could be losing 5% every month. And the last thing I want to do is match pricing for a company losing 5% every month. So how did I find this stuff out? So in my case, where we would have, you know, our industry was one where we went out to people's homes and businesses. So I paid a female employee to stay home and act as a customer. And with her, we would craft a story to explain why she couldn't make a decision right now. And we would pay the diagnostic fee or the show-up fee or whatever, the $39 for them to come out or $129, whatever it was for them to come out. And we paid that. Sometimes her story was her husband wasn't home and she wasn't comfortable making a decision without him. We want to see how they react to that. How do the providers react when a woman says that? Sometimes we flat out said we were just collecting estimates. What's their sales process? What are they saying to get you to make a decision when you tell them you don't want to make a decision? I'd love to hear the language on that. Is their language better than ours? Sometimes we had her play like she was overwhelmed or didn't quite understand. And how hard would the provider push in a situation where a female homeowner felt overwhelmed or didn't quite understand? How do they react to that? How often did we do this? We did at least once every year or two. In the beginning, more often. Later on, as we kind of got a sense for like, well, here's Jim Smith's brand X company. That's how they do it. Here's how these guys do it. Once we kind of got a handle for it, we did it less often. But in the beginning, we did it more often. So real quick, I want to talk about like why it was important to me to send a female out to be our avatar. There's a couple reasons for that. One, I generally believe that if your processes and systems and how you do things are geared towards women, you will likely also capture most men. But if your processes are geared towards men, you could lose most women. And so I choose, I'm not saying you should do this, of course, my choice is to build most of my processes almost always so they're designed for a female avatar in those kinds of industries. Because again, if you're dealing with things in a way or doing things in a way that are attractive to a woman, most men are going to be okay with it too. You're not going to like repel men, but if you do things geared towards how a man would want it, you will repel women. And so Again, that's a personal preference, personal belief. You may not agree with me. And if you don't, that's fine. Send an avatar that would make sense for you. And mainly, though, our avatar was a female. I want to know how a female responds to what she's exposed to from our competitors, right? So more on this in a second. First, I'd like to tell you about how you can join my new group, Business Tips. This is a place where you can ask any question you have about improving your business, your growth, your team, your processes, your profitability. This group is for anyone who has a team of employees they lead, not just business owners. We meet twice a month on a recorded Zoom call, and there's lots of other benefits as well. Just go to joinbusinesstips.com to see what it's all about. It's less than $100 a month with no contracts, no commitment. Again, that's joinbusinesstips.com. Okay, so we've covered the external stuff. Now we're going to talk about a little more internal stuff. Culture is a big thing. You know, what employees like, what are they not like? What is the reputation of them? You know, what is their supposed claim to fame as far as culture? And what's the real claim to fame as far as culture? You know, many companies, you know, over the last 20 years have adopted this kind of saying that, in my opinion, falls fairly flat, that, you know, like, think we have an open door policy, or we treat our employees like family. Well, okay, an open door policy, what does that mean? Like you, if they knock on the door, you let them in. Like, that's an open door policy means people can walk in and, like, tell you what's wrong. I don't know companies that don't have a policy like that. So, like, espousing ourselves as having this open door policy seems kind of weird to me. Maybe I'm missing a part of it. That could be. And if so, I guess I am. We treat our people like family. I don't know a single person who doesn't have some kind of grudge with at least 10% of their family. So, or like stories of weird Christmases and things like that. So I don't know. We're trying to gain that. I've done plenty of episodes where we use these kind of generic terms to, like, mask the fact that we don't really have anything more compelling to say. But again, I want to know what they think they should be known for as far as culture, and what their employees actually think of their culture. Those are two separate things. I want to know both. If they're a home service provider, do guys who live in, or technicians who live in some areas, have more financial opportunities than others? Like, for instance, I knew a company that these guys who lived in a more rural area couldn't go to the more urban area and were told to kind of sit out and wait for the calls to come in, which means they would sit for a couple hours, not make any money. And the guys who were in the more urban areas were busy all the time. And guess what? The guys who were in the rural areas didn't like that. And that's why they left sometimes. That was awesome for me to know. What's their leadership reputation? You know, like, is the owner's son a jerk? Or is the owner a jerk and the son's cool? Like, what is the reputation? What's the structure of the leadership? Do they have a more efficient or effective way to manage their teams? What's their hiring process? What's their hiring criteria? What's their training process? What's the reputation of their training process? Like, how effective is it? Is it, again, awesome to know when a company thinks they have a kick-ass training program and the employees who've gone through it mock them behind their back and tell everybody what a joke it is? That is a fantastic thing for me to know. How do we find this stuff out about, like, internal stuff? We asked in every single interview where the candidate had worked for a competitor, we asked them those kinds of questions. What did you like? What did you not like? What's their leadership like? What's the leadership structure? What did you like about that? What didn't you like about that? What's the culture? Stop talking. See what they say. Don't say, what's the culture like? Is it this or is it that? That's not how we do it. What's the culture like? Let them answer, right? What do employees like there? What do employees not like there? We literally ask these questions I just rattled off to you twice now. I've said them out loud. In interviews, we ask them in supply houses, in industry events. We ask them in industry association meetings. Anytime we saw an opportunity to get intel from an employee or a prospective employee, or employee we knew worked somewhere else, we took it. I wanted to know this stuff inside and out. I wanted to know what Brand X's vulnerabilities and advantages were. And we did. And it was awesome to know that stuff. All right, KPIs, again, internal, now it's a little bit different. Like, I want to know things like, what is the industry standard? Or what do people think the industry standard for labor percentage of revenue should be? Or materials or other cost of goods sold percentage? What's a target gross margin for people with a comparable size company? What's the lead to appointment booking percentage? What's the close percentage or warranty and callback rate? What's the cost per lead, cost per customer acquisition? The difference of those cost per lead is cost is to get the phone to ring versus the cost to get the customer to buy. Those are two different metrics, sometimes conflated. They're different, cost per lead versus cost per acquisition. For revenue producing employees, if we're doing hourly, like, what's the daily required billable hours? If we're doing some other thing like commission or something, what's the minimum performance expectations per day, per week, per month, per year, like, whatever. How do we find this out? Sometimes we ask our CPA. Sometimes we ask our banker. We ask people at industry association meetings. And if you can't ask a local competitor, like you're at an industry association meeting, you're like, hey, what's a minimum performance expectations for your revenue producing employees? And they're like, I really don't want to tell you that. Or like, what's your labor percentage of really? Like, they don't want to tell you that. Or cost per lead. Like, I get all that stuff. So some of these things we can't ask there. It was great to develop relationships with people in our industry in a different geographic area, because we could call and say, we could ask those questions, and they don't care, because if they're seven states away, like, why would they care about sharing that? They're very gracious about that stuff. Oftentimes they want to help people. People you don't know or in your area or aren't directly competing against are way more likely to answer these kinds of questions about like KPI kind of stuff. People local, it feels more weird. It just does. So let's accept that. And this is one of the best reasons to go to those national conventions. You meet people where it's later very easy to call them and like, hey, Frank, we met at the thing a couple weeks ago. Can we set up a time where I can just like pick your brain for 30 minutes? I've both made those calls and received those calls. And in all instances I can think of, people were very gracious and helpful. I honestly can't think of a single time where even guys or people who were not overly friendly weren't gracious and helpful. Oftentimes people are flattered to be asked. So great place to find out that kind of information. I'll just say on this, like wrapping up, like many things, the first thing we had to do is decide to do it. In many ways, trying to imagine making decisions, like going back in time 5 or 10 years and making decisions without this knowledge feels like I'd completely be flying blind. I'd be completely hamstrung. But before I knew these things, I couldn't contextualize or understand how much it would help us. It's like the saying goes, you don't know what you don't know. Well, this is an area where, I can't say it was my goal, but I do feel in some cases I knew other companies better than they knew because they were not honest about how, again, the training thing is a great example. And the guys in rural areas who were not making as much money as the guys in more urban areas, I knew that stuff better than the business owners of those companies knew it. Maybe, maybe not. Maybe they didn't know. They just didn't care. I don't know. But it seems like they would, if they knew, they would fix these things. And I knew these things at a pretty in-depth level. And it was tremendous benefit for us to know these things. So of course, as we gather more information, we modify our processes, our offerings, our trainings, et cetera, to get better where we're deficient. And we also highlight in our language, our marketing, our outreach, where we are really better than Brandex in very specific ways. So we don't say the same thing everyone else says, which generally is expertise and value, or, you know, years in business and pricing, fair pricing. Like, I don't want to say that stuff. I want to have like meaningful things to say that what's different about us. And I developed that by finding what everybody else sucks at and what we're good at. And then I brag about those things, not in a braggadocious kind of way, but like we let people know this is what's different about us. And I can just tell you, in our case, it worked. Okay, don't forget, go to joinbusinesstips.com to see all the benefits included in my new group called Business Tips. We meet twice a month on a recorded Zoom call, and you can ask any question you have about improving your business, your growth, your team, your process, or your profitability. And I'll answer it right there on the spot for you. And you get the input of other people who have lots of experience also. So just go to joinbusinesstips.com to see what's all included. It's less than $100 a month. No contracts, no commitment. That's joinbusinesstips.com. As always, if you find the information I share helpful, please share this podcast with a friend or colleague you think could benefit. Of course, public sharing is good. Ratings and reviews are also good. If you haven't given us a rating review, that'd be awesome if you did that. Appreciate all those folks who've already done it. You guys are fantastic. I appreciate that. And until next week, that's it for this week. I'll talk to you all next week.